Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, again in our big echoey room. Welcome to the Vice Gaming Podcast. I'm Mike Diver, UK editor of everything Vice Gaming. I'm joined today by a returning guest, Steve Burns. Please say hello, Steve Burns.
Hello.
Fantastic. And for the first time by Vice staff writer Joel Golby. Hello, Joel.
Hey, it's me.
That's totally you. We sit opposite each other.
We do,
don't we? Yeah.
I try and avoid eye contact.
As much as possible. But I know you like video games, which is why you're here as well.
I admit to that.
You have admitted to that. what have you been liking of late that isn't Rocket League? Or is it just exclusively
Rocket League? Honestly, just that, because I got off... I don't have as much time to nerd out over games like you.
Why do people think that people who cover games have time to do this? We have the least time.
Nah, that's a lie. So I got off the back of playing Metal Gear Solid, and then I was like, I'm never going near a big game again. I've been playing a little bit of Witness, but mainly just Rocket League.
So Witness is all lines? And
yeah, but there's something going on in the Witness, and I don't know what yet, and I don't know if it's actually ever going to turn into a storyline that will make me happy.
Yeah. Have you reached the DJ Khaled bit yet?
No.
Oh, okay. That's an Easter egg you've got to look out for.
What?
Yeah, man. You can unlock DJ Khaled in there. It gives you a motivational video. Or at least that's what YouTube tells me.
That feels important.
Yeah. I think you might have to just... You know, I'm not sure that's actually in the final game.
We need to hurry this up so I can go home and do
that. Well, there you go. At least look it up. Steve Burns, what have you been playing lately?
Hitman. Again.
But they keep adding stuff.
Yeah, they do.
Which is nice if you spent 50 or 60 quid for a season pass.
Oh, no, well, I didn't. So, but I imagine if you did.
I mean, if you're the kind of person who buys video games.
Exactly.
Absurd.
Which is a great crime of all video games writers. They don't pay for any of their games.
Yeah, which so, ultimately makes us...
They're like Damon Dash and sneakers. They're like, whatever.
We're more like the ODB of sneakers, aren't we? We're just like, we can afford them, but we just crash in and steal them anyway. You know? It's like, fuck it. I mean, we could buy these
Pick
games,
your own but, reference, isn't it?
But yeah, well, that's good. Vice Gaming ran a kind of roundup of what we were playing in July just the other day. And so I've been playing things like, I've been getting into Hyperlight Drifter a little bit. I've been getting a little bit into Adrift. Into Headlander, which is a really good new Double Fine Adult Swim game, but mostly Persona 4, because I still think it's like 2008 or whenever that game came out, but it's quite good. I wanted to talk first of all about kicking simulators, because it's the start of the football season, and it seems like a prime time, what with demos imminent for FIFA and PES, mm-hmm. and of course they're both coming out in September. I want to say both in September. Mm. FIFA might be October, but football games are quite a big thing. FIFA's one of the biggest selling franchises, if we want to call it that, series in the world. PES slightly less so, but when it comes to football games, Joel, what was the first football game that like you got into? Because I'm imagining, well, I know that you're someone who enjoys a football game.
Yeah, I lose a lot of time to football games. The first one, I think, was probably FIFA 97 on the Game Boy, which is one of those weird ones where you could only...
Like a Game Boy Advance?
No, that was
like
straight up Game Boy.
A black and white Game Boy.
It was a piece of shit. It had Gyllenhaal on the front, and you could only sort of run in diagonals, and I played that game a lot, and I think I scored maybe one goal in all that time. It was one of those weird games where... It's essentially unplayable in every possible way.
On a screen like that, I can't imagine.
Yeah, tiny screen, diagonal running, and you're just sort of making all these sort of pixelated slide tackles on nothing. And it was shit. And then I got really into a really obscure... Because my mum did that thing where I went, oh, mum, can I have a PlayStation? And she went, of course, at Christmas. And then I got a Sega Saturn, which wasn't the same, and everyone knows that apart from mums. And it came with like a Sega World Soccer or something like that.
Yeah, there was a
I think might have been like a spiritual sort of predecessor to ISS Pro, which became Pro Evo, but it was kind of shit. But I did figure out a trick once where you could score from the halfway line with the first touch, and I won like 32-0. And then I'm like, I have just beaten this game inside out. I can't get any joy out of it.
Exactly. Once you've tricked the system,
yeah,
then it doesn't become fun anymore, right?
Yeah.
It's like scoring with a perfect diagonal in, like, say, any kind of old school game. Steve, what about yourself? What football game? Because I'm going to assume it was something 16-bit.
No, something really shy on the Commodore, maybe. And I don't remember the name of it.
64?
Yeah, I honestly, it just exists in my mind. It's probably a false memory. I probably just looked at a screenshot of it.
I played one on C64 that might have been called Match Day or something.
By Kevin, whatever his name is.
And it was like side on.
Yeah.
And they just went...
Yeah, it's probably the same one.
Pretty fucking shite.
But thanks to being a child at that point, my imagination did most of the work, which was great.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, which is one of the main problems with new FIFA, in that
it shows no imagination.
New FIFA is like full kit wanker the game, isn't it? It's like everything has to be like watching it on TV, but not playing football. It's right. About like Martin Tyler going, and oh, next week we'll be looking at, like, I don't give a fuck about that, Martin Tyler. Like, just get off the screen so I can get back to fucking my dream team. It's just, but who knows what's in it? I don't know, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's what I really like about FIFA, is it's just like watching, it's like, it's gone through, it had a little moment, there was a little sort of, in the middle of the last decade, there was a wrestle from Pro Evo to FIFA, like year on year, as to who'd be the good game. And like, there was a little run of about 3 years where FIFA was like, we'll be the good one now. And then they've just gone through and it's like this weird soulless experience. But I'm really into it. And I lost a lot of one summer to FIFA Ultimate Team, which isn't even a real card game. Is quite a bad online experience.
Don't you end up having to pay for that though? Or do you?
I never quite did, but I came close. I came close to being like, you know, I'm getting a lot of enjoyment out of this, so maybe I should just deck £40 on like cards that don't exist. It got really
but
weird.
But you could have a whole other career as a YouTuber just opening them, right? I've seen those people.
They have a lot of joy and a lot of energy, and I don't think me, like, sad and alone in quite a gloomy room, like, just sat on a shit sofa
crying
with, like, a throw
you got another
it.
Andros Townsend.
Yeah, exactly, and just going like, oh, no, this was a shit waste of
I've got eight
£60. Yeah, exactly.
Can and you then, do that, though, in Ultimate Team? Can you play swapsies with people? I have no idea.
There is a... If you really want to crack open this chest within me, then I can talk to you at length about it. But essentially, there is a strictly regulated market, which only became regulated about a year and a half ago, as I remember. And before then, it was outlaws. You could charge whatever you wanted for a card which made your Ronaldos and your Messis, you know, 31 million of whatever the currency is in the game, and you could buy like Dwight Gale for 500, and like that was the difference. So you'd get all these players with, you know, I had a team built around Dwight Gale. He was a really good performer for me, but then you'd just get mauled by some like 12-year-old who plays it every single day and just like farms these weird coins and just somehow has Ronaldo and Messi. Yeah. But it was this weird sort of lawless trading system. And then EA came in and, as they are prone to do, sucked the soul out of it entirely in one fell swoop by just like instigating these sort of bans, these price bans. That
is there not a black market FIFA you can still play?
I imagine.
Or does someone need to do that?
I imagine there's probably a black market for, like, on actual eBay. I think there's a way around it, where if you pay actual money for it and then some guy sells you a card for a specific amount and stuff like that.
We did have an article on Vice, I should say, plugging it, that looked into Vice.com. Vice Gaming on Vice.com. that looked into the kind of the dodgy dealings. And a lot of people were like, didn't want to say anything.
It's proper deep throat.
It's like, you know, dark web of FIFA kind of stuff.
Yeah. You don't want to know how I got Miss Kieran Gibbs.
No one ever wanted to know that. They ended up with Kieran Gibbs. But like, I mean, you said about Ultimate Team. I don't play games like that, but I did used to make, you know, stupid teams of my own in Sensible Soccer. And I would always make the school team, or I'd make like the team I was playing for at the time in the game, so we could play against, you know, like in the custom team menu, so you'd be playing against like Delicatessen and like, you know, Pencil Case, or I can't remember what they were, you know, things you find in your pockets or whatever they're called, or Norwich 11, because the developers essentially were Norwich fans, so they had a Norwich 11 under the custom teams, which were just ridiculous things like, you know, Spice Rack and, you know, things that begin with A.
See, that's quite interesting, because when I was given like access to any sort of editing thing in that first Sega game that I lost a lot of time to, yours are quite unambitious, weird little
They were pre-built in. I built
like the maddest, weird, like 9-year-old's fantasy team that you've ever seen,
with real players, with yourself in it.
No, what I did is I took the West Ham preloaded team and then carefully changed the name of every single player on it. But their stats didn't change and their appearance didn't change. So I had Julian Dix as Roberto Carlos just clunking up and down the wing. I had like Zola up front with Ronaldo on the bench. But for some reason, I remember I kept John Hartson. I was just like, well, he's world class. What are you going to do?
For a little while in those Saturn years, John Hartson was a prospect.
He had a foot.
He used it against Arl Berkovich in a very satisfying training ground manner.
Saturn, didn't you, Steve?
No, the only person I know who had a Saturn got it by accident. When their mum ordered a kettle from a Littlewoods catalogue and they sent a Saturn instead. Amazingly, they didn't send it back, which would have been the perfect ending for any Saturn.
If you went, no.
I would rather have the $14.99 kettle, please.
I don't want it, yeah.
But no, I never had one. I still find them to be quite almost exotic, even though they're not rare, in that I'm fascinated by them, that Sega made this disaster for what the world was going to be, 3D graphics, but for 2D games it was amazing, which is what fucking dreadful pub bores say about it. But yeah, I think every year or so, there's a great shop over the road from our office which sells all that kind of secondhand stuff that GameStation used to do before they got fucking bought. And you're like, oh, I'm gonna buy a Saturn and a RAM car, and you're like, fuck.
What would you do
mate.
With it though?
Yeah, I'd look at it and then be like, oh, where's that gonna go?
You'd
now?
Play.
I'd play full frame soccer versions of X-Men versus Street Fighter for a minute, and then wish I'd just emulated it, like any real person does these days.
Well, not really on the topic of emulation, but older games have been revived on modern consoles. We've seen Kickoff come back disastrously. Kickoff 2 was one of the first football games I played, kind of pre-Sensi era. It was that and MicroProse Soccer on the Amiga. And I always loved the speed of it, but it was a total, like, you know, two-legged dog to control. It was all over the shop. So when Kickoff was coming back, I was like skeptical, but I thought, like, I mean, come on, you've got however many years between, you know, 1989 and now, you're going to have learned how to make a good game. But it was fucking, pardon my language, we're swearing a lot on this one. Terribly sorry. But it was like DOA, wasn't it? I mean, it was a complete waste of time.
I had someone call me in to the games room to just show off how bad it was. It's like the Hindenburg on 32 times fast forward. It's just, how do you play it? Like, I found Sensible Soccer to be unplayable as well, even when I was a kid. Just couldn't get my head around the dribbling. Although, so I did a PES video the other day, and someone was like, the ball sticks to their foot, terrible. And I was like, there they are. There's the sensible guys.
It's
John Hare going, what's this, bollocks, basically. It wasn't.
It wasn't actually.
Just to clarify, it was not. Get your legal team on that one.
John Hare, who's making another Sensible Soccer, effectively, in Sociable Soccer, which I have played.
So, sorry, just to clarify, when you say making another Sensible Soccer, is he making like another shit old game?
He's making a game.
Why does he make a real game? Make a real game.
A spiritual successor to the Sensi games, I suppose.
So, like.
But it's playable in VR. I've played it in VR.
So is it good?
It's good. I enjoyed it. But the thing is...
But is it actually good?
Yeah, well,
or is it good like when you drink real ale and you go like, that's good.
Careful. Stay nice. Stay nice, Joel.
It's no lager.
I enjoyed it, right? It's one of these things that like kickoff came back. Kickoff wasn't very good. Social Shocker is shaping up to be a lot better. It's straight in, one button, does kind of everything, you know, kind of that old school. But it plays well and it plays fast already. Never going to get long sessions in it like you do with FIFA, like you do with PES, where you sit there and you play and like 5 hours have gone by. But like with mates and stuff, it's going to be pretty good, I think. The VR mode is weird though, because it switches vertical play to horizontal and then you're like the god looming over it. And so you can move your head around, look around the pitch as you're playing. It's a funny one.
I think just get FIFA.
Well, I'm glad you said maybe just get FIFA, because I get the feeling you're going to buy FIFA this year, whereas you're probably going PES, Steve.
Mm.
And does one think the other one is silly for doing that, or does it just beyond? Is it reached the point now where if you're, even though PES did come back strong, and I think last year it was a much, much better game, by this point, if you're just right into FIFA, you're not going to leave FIFA, are you?
No. I think it's got everything that people really, really want out of football. As in, you know, so it's got all the clubs. You don't have to fuck around in the edit mode, changing Man Blue to Man City or any of that. And the presentation in PES is appalling still. They've made some really great strides, but the commentary is just... In one of the preview builds of an old PES, they said Benzema's name wrong. Well, they said it twice in two different ways, so one of them was wrong. And I was like, oh my... Like, and it's just that sort of thing, and... Benzema. I think the PES is a lot better to play, and I really don't like the over the top Sky Sports nature of FIFA. Mm. But it's slicker in a lot of ways. It's more accessible, and it has Ultimate Team. I think if it didn't have Ultimate Team, then it'd be a completely different discussion.
Because as you said, Joel, contest, yeah.
I met the guy who dreamt up Ultimate Team, so a guy who knew what card games were. And I saw him at Gamescom one year, and he looked like the happiest man in the world. Considering he's probably making millions and millions in revenue for his company, you could tell he was just like, yeah, I'm the man now. And basically that is, for me, I think the focus of a lot of the FIFA product, because that's where the money
has come from. It keeps people online, and it keeps people pushing money into something they've already spent 40 or 50 quid.
Could there be like a model of FIFA then in not so many years that is... kind of free to play, that you pay your way through it? Like, you could have the premium box version that gives you all the leagues, or if you just want Ultimate Team, why not make that free effectively, but like you pay a little like subscription service or something? Or
they
like,
kind of have some, so on mobile, sorry, I sound like them now. I attended a FIFA presentation when it was like, okay, so we never want you to not be looking at a screen with FIFA on it. It's like one of those classic, very corporate things over in Guildford. They're like, so when you're traveling, you'll be able to check your Ultimate Team stuff. And then at your PC, you'll be able to check. And any screen that you're looking at on a daily basis should have some of this on it. It's like proper RoboCop, like dystopian. Dick Jones is going to come out in a minute. I was like, this is a bit weird. I just want to kick a ball around. I don't want the upsell constantly.
But conversely, that sounds wicked. So it's different, isn't it? It's hard to get that balance right, because I really want to buy and trade cards that don't exist on my phone on the bus. But then again, mind control. It's a tricky balance. But what FIFA have done this year, they've got FIFA Ultimate Team right. They know that's a killer app, and now they're branching out into something very weird looking with this new storyline.
The story, which is what NBA games have done previously.
Yeah.
That doesn't appeal to you as the FIFA fan.
I don't think it does, but I say that, but I always get dragged into... I think FIFA games they pull you in by making you a little bit invested in something that doesn't exist. So, like, you know, every year I'll start a new save with Arsenal and buy the transfers I'd like to see them do in real life, and then I get really invested. I'm three seasons in and I've won three consecutive leagues. And I'm bringing through this amazing pacey winger. He's 20, he's going to change the world. Like, when you're doing that, then you're like, when people go like, oh, do you want to go to the pub? You go like, no, I can't. I absolutely cannot. And that's, I think that's what this storyline thing is basically aiming to do. Because when I start a new game of FIFA, I'm like, anything that makes it harder and a longer process for me to actually just kick a bloody ball frustrates the hell out of me. And what you were saying about PES being quite clunky to actually get through, I find the FIFA menus just so fucking endless. Like, even when it's quite a slick boot up and everything, it's all, you know, very flash, it still takes ages and ages to actually get to the point where you're kicking a ball. And this is how you're going to make that longer. But I also know that I'm going to lose about 100 hours to it.
No football game needs cutscenes, does it?
That's no, the thing. No, it absolutely does not.
You don't need a cutscene. You don't need a cutscene. I've written down here as well, just because I know you both like the real-life kicking. Who will win the Premier League anyway? Just in case anyone's betting off the back of what two people in this room think.
Yeah, that
I mean, I'm a Southampton fan, so I have no opinion, but you're Arsenal, right?
Yep.
And you're Man United, so, you know, both in with a fighting chance. I mean, you've just spent all the money, which has been totally proven to work in the past.
It's turned out to not be as much money, in fact, as the as everyone had thought. It's funny how that really occurs.
It's
like 89 million. I mean, let's not couch it in any sort of reality. Yeah. Like, 89 million is still fucking ridiculous. But I don't know. I think there's like 6 or 7 teams now. I mean, Leicester, this is classic football pub chat again. Going to, you know, squeeze a thigh, you know, the person sitting next to me, go, anyone's in with a chance now? But I don't know. I can't really see past the usual suspects.
No, not everyone's in. Like, Leicester are not going to win the league. That's my hot bet.
I think that's a safe bet. Yeah.
I think United, all they've done is drafted in winners, and they look like that kind of scary, intimidating big team again. And they've got Mourinho, which means they're never going to concede a goal. And I just think I don't know if Guardiola and City will be an instant bond. I think Liverpool might do better than expected, but I think United will pretty much take it.
Well, there you go. Who knows? Football games, then. I guess it pays your money, takes your choice. Exactly. I would say if you like the purer version of what I see on the TV in terms of the way the game is played, it's probably PES. But in terms of the TV, in terms of how it's presented, it's probably FIFA, yeah? It's a good summarisation, isn't it? Yeah. No Man's Sky. I don't know if you want to stick around, John. You're more than welcome to.
I pray not.
Okay. That's quite all right. We're going to move on. I'm not even going to edit this bit out. I'm going to leave it in there.
All right.
I can't help you.
It's enough video game chat.
That's enough chat for Joel. Oh, we dropped that microphone. I'm now in two channels. This is very exciting.
Joel's off to play Ultimate Team.
See you later, Joel. Bye. Shut the door. I know it's big, but so are you. Bye now. Yeah, right, cracking. No Man's Sky, Steve. By the time this podcast goes out,
yep,
like, people will be playing it. Well, they're already playing it. But I know that you only just got it in that Video Gamer, and I only just got it here at Vice. You've played 2 minutes of it. What were those
literally,
2 minutes like?
Literally about 2 minutes of it. It didn't start the way that I thought it would start for a game which has the promise of 18 quintillion or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Lots of
planets.
World.
You start in a very kind of mundane way, fixing a ship. So, which I suppose is a tutorial, and just this is how you craft, this is how you get the items needed to all that sort of stuff. At the moment, it just seems to be a bit Destiny meets Minecraft. So,
that's two of the biggest games.
Not in
ever.
Terms of the shooting, for example, but the kind of world building stuff. The menus, some of the general aesthetic.
The menus looked a lot like Destiny when I saw
it. Yeah. And so, yeah, when you go out, and it's cool in terms of everyone gets a different planet to begin on. And I had one that was, you know, it was nice, kind of neutral as it goes in No Man's Sky in the colour sky and general aesthetic, 33 degrees. Whereas Jim had one that was raining and just looked like Scotland, and it's 4 degrees. So he wasn't very impressed by that.
You don't want to spawn in Scotland.
No, absolutely. In any way, shape, or form.
Sorry, Scotland. But it's hard. Everyone's going to have a different first impression. I know that the message coming out of Sony, or certainly the message to me, and I've spoken to Sean Murray as well.
Mm-hmm.
But again, by the time you hear this, there'll be a piece, an interview with Sean on the website.
they're all very aware that it's going to rub some people up the wrong way.
Yeah.
That people are not going to get the game that they thought they were going to get.
Mm.
The trailers have said survival. They have specified survival. But there's more of that than there is just poking around looking at pretty things, isn't there? From what I can understand.
Well, this is the whole thing about No Man's Sky is that I don't think that... People have had too long to think about it. This is the problem. They've had too long to build their version of No Man's Sky. And, you know, they have been hyped for it. Really hyped, and the problem with hype is, you know, that word is basically a contraction of hypodermic, right? So I just adjust my wank hat, yeah? Like all fucking drugs where someone's going to have to, at some point you're going to go, no, I can't do this anymore. And people are just burning out on getting excited for a game, which is something that you don't really want. But they've had too much time to think about what it could be with no real hard facts on what it will be. And
would it have been better then if they hadn't, if rather than Hello Games saying, you know, we're not really doing much in the way of previewing, which they didn't, there was something in March for journalists, they didn't do any kind of early access whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it would have been easier for them coming out now if there had been some kind of early access preview or anything like that? Because, you know, they would have had, given, like you say, the length of time that people have been excited for it, to give that passionate community and a section of internet dickheads on the other side, you know, something to actually get to grips with. Would that have been beneficial? Or
sometimes that works.
People would just rinse the problems, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't think that would necessarily have been beneficial. But, yeah, the messaging... I think what's happened is this game has such a good premise to a lot of people, or certain people. Mm. And then Sony obviously went big with it, and they were on stage, and everyone was like, wow, this is going to be amazing.
E3 2014.
Yeah, 14. Yeah. It's a great-looking game, like, artistically. Mm. And you think, okay. And then all the people who wanted, you know, people who grew up with Elite or love spacefaring and sci-fi, and obviously the Venn diagram for video game fans and sci-fi fans.
It's a very particular type of sci-fi as well, isn't it? Because it's quite hard, I guess, but also... like that fantastical look. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's very late 60s, early 70s aesthetic, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not necessarily Star Wars, more Silent Running. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like I said, I can see myself playing it because I'm genuinely interested in it. I'm not excited for it in any way. I'm not going to run home and play it. I mean, I've seen a few games journalists on Twitter like, it's here. Like, and there have been a few games where I've been like that. But I don't know. It's still, even having played it, an unknown quantity, and I do think it's going to feel like that for quite a long time. Or conversely, it might just be like after 10 minutes, like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah,
I got this.
It'd be a shame if anyone has that 10 minutes and I'm out experience.
Yeah,
I'd like to think it doesn't. Although the simple fact that the game doesn't immediately say, "Here, fly somewhere," and it actually makes you do some mundane shit.
Yeah.
Is maybe not the best approach. You kind of want to have the wee fun thing, and then it all goes to shit.
Well, the payoff will be that after doing your chores, you'll get to go out and play, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I will say that I do like the studio. They posted an amazing picture today of the BBC coming over, and the front office of Hello Games just looks like a house.
Yeah.
And it had what looked like to be... like a tumble dryer in the window with the thing sticking out of the window. So, and I was just like, you know what? Fair play.
Yeah.
'Cause I've worked and been to a lot of those very sterile corporate, like EA's ones, crazy, big E from above.
I guess now it's out, or you know, it will be out by now. You kind of maybe appreciate more that it was just a tiny, tiny team. I know they kept saying it, but all the shit that came their way, like, you know, why is this not out yet, blah, 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 blah. You know, there was literally, like, I think at most, like, at any one point, at most, maybe 2 dozen people.
Yeah. This is a studio that made, like, 5 or 6 Joe Danger games.
Well, that's all they've made before.
And then...
I mean, not the individuals, but as a studio.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean Murray worked on one of the Burnout games, if not more than that. He worked on Black as well.
Oh, really?
Underrated, I dare say, PS2 shooter.
It's very well rated. I was playing Fear while Black was out, so you know, it's one of those things. But I like the team, and they seem to have been as upfront as they could have been. I suppose it's one of those where they are an indie studio, but I wouldn't say that No Man's Sky is an indie game.
No.
Not in any way, shape or form. If your definition of AAA is just it's got loads of people working on it, then you fucked it. That is a game with a marketing budget that would make a lot of indie games just weep.
Even their kind of cardboard displays for shops are much nicer than normal cardboard displays for shops.
Their press kit's lovely as well.
The press kit is very nice.
Hey, listen, I'm just saying, it's had some thought put into it.
Yes, it's very pretty. Yeah. I nearly didn't open it.
I did. Yeah, I mean, obviously.
You got to, but the fact that it came sealed was quite something. And you're like, I don't know.
What are you thinking in years to come?
No, Mike, thinking, I'm just that guy who likes things pristine. And it's one of those things that, like, you know, you do feel a bit like, you know, there's a lot of talk of entitlement or whatever and privilege in games and stuff. And all right, yeah, we know, like we said earlier on, like, we get free games from time to time. Usually it's a code. Usually it's a few numbers you type into your place and whatever, and ping, there's a game. And that's great. It doesn't really cost anyone anything. So when a company does make that extra effort, I'm not talking about all the tat that comes with it. Fuck all of that. I don't need any of the fucking nonsense promotional stuff. But all we've really got is a game in a slightly nicer case than the retail version. And it's just a nice thing to have. I like it. I'm a fan of those little steel books. You know, those metal ones? I like them as well.
Yeah, I used to be, but then...
As long as they fit.
See, that's the problem, isn't it? You get a nice shelf, and then there's one just where it's
all over the shop. Anyway, so No Man's Sky, I'm going to go and play it tomorrow. Well, yesterday, by the time you hear this, probably. Very strange. Very, very strange. And spend as much time as I can on it. Because I'm intrigued, but I do fall into that I'm still excited category. I think I've been kind of very purposely not watching very much, not because of spoilers or whatever, because everything's gonna be different, but just because I just kind of want to go into it without feeling like I know what's roughly expected.
Yeah,
I love the idea that I just love the fact that, you know, that the company, this whole project, hasn't been kind of like, and here's a press event, and here's a press event, and here's this, and here's that, and here's this reveal, that reveal, this reveal. It's all kind of been like nothing, 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 everything. Which must be terrifying for the studio. And like Sean said to me, like, you know, this game has put them in some serious debt. You know, that they need to, they will sell. Of course they're going to sell lots of copies, but it's a big investment on their part. So I hope it pays off.
I think it will. It's going to do crazy launch, I feel, for a game by a team of that size.
Yeah.
And then we'll get the backlash, obviously. And then
sure they already are, various op-eds lined up at various other sites that we won't mention.
No,
I'm sure I'll get pitched.
It's going to be Hot Take Tuesday, I'm telling you.
Hot Take Tuesday. I mean, I nearly went back into football. I want to go back into Nintendo, though. We don't talk about Nintendo very much because they don't do very much.
They just changed the world, Mike. What are you talking about?
They
didn't. Niantic did.
Well, there was the Pokemon Go thing, which... is something that happened. Apparently people like it.
Yep.
My kids like it, but, you know, one is 5 and one is nearly 3. Make of that what you will. One thing that I really enjoyed seeing, it was during Develop Conference in Brighton, and I was going out for my lunch and I saw people tweeting about Nintendo. I was like, why Nintendo now? And that they'd announced the NES Mini, this little kind of preload with 30 games.
Mm-hmm.
Little plug-in console, you know, we've seen these kind of things before. We've got there's loads of Sega ones, right, that have like Altered Beast and Streets of Rage, and then 50 pieces of shit maze games or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you might get Sonic 2 on it or whatever. But this is Nintendo doing it themselves. It's got 30 proper NES games on it. And it went straight to the top of the sales charts, like ahead of No Man's Sky, ahead of Uncharted 4, ahead of a PlayStation or an Xbox, and ahead of the 3DS charger, which I was like, hey, why is that there? But 3DSs don't come with chargers. They sell... loads of them.
How did they get away with that?
To ask the question. Right?
Yeah.
Imagine if your PS4 didn't come with a pad.
Yeah.
It's basically the same
thing. They'd be like, oh, but we thought you had another pad. Sorry.
Yeah, obviously. We thought you had one already. I wanted to pick your brains over it because, I mean, I don't know if you were a Nintendo or a Sega kid as a youth, or maybe you were lucky and had access to both. I was mostly Sega, certainly at that time, we never had a NES in the house. We had a SNES in the end. So for me, I sort of saw that. I was like, wow. Like, I mean, obviously, I've played Mario Brothers 3. I've played the original Zelda. Bubble Bobble, I've played. All these games are on it. And then there's, like, stuff that I've never played, like the original Castlevania. Never played that. Played Super Metroid, but never the original Metroid. So for me, I'm like, cool. This is, like, awesome gaming history. And it's, like, 50 quid. I mean, is that something that gets you excited at all? Is that something you're going to be into? Or is it just like pointless nostalgia for boring dads like me?
I don't know. I had a NES and a... then I had a Mega Drive and then a SNES much later on, in it, towards the end of its life. I was really into Sega stuff. But yeah, Nintendo, some of those games were great. I'm not sure they still are great. I mean, it's nostalgia, because otherwise it wouldn't come in a NES, in a mini NES pack.
Yeah, looking the way
it like, is. It would right, just come on a fucking flash drive, right?
Yeah.
So, totally. You know,
they're all emulated, right?
Pointless nostalgia is absolutely fine in my book. Like, in anything, people buy retro football shirts, you know, they buy Led Zeppelin United States of America Tour 1977 shirts. And so, I'm fine as long as the hardware is good and the representations of those games are good. The Mega Drive ones are really known to be quite poor.
They're patchy, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm fine with it. I think I'd take a SNES one.
That's what everyone's saying now. Everyone I've spoken to about is like, you know, where is the SNES with World on it, with Link to the Past, etc. F-Zero. Oh my God, that would sell so many.
Yeah, I think the SNES is just close enough, especially that console and the way it's a lot of the games look and some of the techniques they used or had. That's just close enough to be palatable to people who aren't also mad, rabid nostalgists.
Yeah.
Whereas the NES is just that jump too far.
Do you think, though, I mean, it's a little bit video games 101, isn't it? Whereby, like, the way I see it is, like, you know, if you like modern day Mario games, you should at least have a look at Mario Brothers or Mario Brothers 3. You know, if you're excited about the new Zelda, it's worth having a look at how Nintendo would just, here is your world, go out and explore with the first Zelda. You know, you forget that. That's one of the first games I can remember playing on my mate's NES when we were like 9 or 10, maybe a tiny bit younger than that, where it was just like, no one told you where to go. It wasn't just scrolling left to right. It was like, do you want to go up, down, left or right? It's like, shit, I don't know. I'm paralyzed by choice. I think there's a lot of stuff in those games that, you know, if you're a younger enthusiast of video games, you can play for a bit, maybe not all the way through, you don't need to do that, and get something out of and learn a little bit about where all this came from. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I do think that there's no... that you don't have to... this will get me in trouble with the Nintendo Defense Force. You don't have to play the original Super Mario Brothers if you've played Super Mario World.
Yeah,
in the same way that, you know, this is what it used to be like thing, in the same way that you don't need to watch LA Takedown if you've seen Heat. You know, you can appreciate that it was the same general idea made at the time with the limitations of its time. Now, I still think that those Super Mario Brothers games are really good. And there's a very clear design through line. So that's really cool. But I wouldn't be like, I know a lot of people sit their kids down and they're like, now we're going to play this. And it's like, Dad, get a grip. Like, it's, you know, just whack on fucking Super Mario Brothers World. It's like, what's the problem here?
So what you're basically saying by that logic is, if you've seen The Force Awakens, you never need to watch A New Hope.
Well, not really, because New Hope's 10 times better than Force Awakens. Force Awakens is like a hyper-budget fan
remake
film. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I think that was absolutely the intention, to kind of soft reboot, basically, the whole thing.
Damn them.
I mean, I'll tell you one thing about The Phantom Menace, right? Here we go, while we're on this subject. Phantom Menace is one of the worst constructed movies I've ever seen. It is incredible.
It had pod racing in it, right?
But at least when I think of The Phantom Menace, I actually feel something, usually disgust. Or just
it elicits an emotion.
Yeah, or just a mad kind of, yeah, that, how?
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas when I think of The Force Awakens, I just think of like Tori Amos's version of Smells Like Teen Spirit or something. It's like, it's fine, it's nice, things happen in it. You're like, okay, that's a cool... And I'm like, but I could just go and watch Star Wars. That's got Harrison Ford in it, and he's not 200 years old.
Yep. He's very old, is what we're saying. Cool. I, for the first time ever on a Vice Gaming podcast, I asked if anyone wanted to send in a question, and very, very few people did. I'm just going to read out maybe just two of them. I think we should do No Man's Sky one that someone... I may as well do their Twitter handle just in case they care. But at FM Kappa asked that, well, will humanity, by which he means the PC Master Race, I suppose, be able to recover from a 3-day setback in exploring No Man's Sky? Because it's coming out later on PC, right?
Yeah.
Is that PC people's own fault for not having consoles, or to, you know, thinking they're above that kind of thing? Or will they ultimately have the best version of the game anyway? So
yes, they will, undoubtedly. And this is the thing. Once, when you're waiting for something, obviously it feels like an age, especially if you're younger. So when I was like 13 or 14, when Resident Evil 2 was about to come out, I remember there was a very definite part where I considered what would happen if I died before Resident Evil 2 came out. And this terrified me. Not that I'd be dead, but that I would not get to play Resident Evil 2. Now I'm like, okay, you know, video games, like... So I think that for some people, that's going to be like feel like forever. Yeah. But then as soon as you play the first minute of it or whatever, you'll forget it all. So I think we'll be fine.
I agree with that. On an indie dev point, at Christy Pride asked about kind of what people spend on shorter indie games. And she was like, is $20 too much for 3 to 5 hours? I certainly never put any value, like, you know, the value is not kind of like the length of time, but I guess what you get out of it. And I said this as someone who's now played through Abzu 3 times completely and then gone back into each chapter to get all of the trophies.
Yeah.
Right? So...
You're still doing that.
No, I haven't done that for years. And I was like, there aren't many trophies in it, to be fair. And I was like, I wanted to... But that was a game and, you know, it's probably about 90 minutes start to finish, much like Journey made by... Mm. Some of the same people who made Journey. I didn't pay for it, but if I had paid 15 quid for it, I've got everything I wanted and more out of that.
Yeah.
So I guess it's game dependent, is it? But
it is. I think in places there's an unreasonable expectation of what games should cost. I mean, if you're going to see Terminator Genesis and it's 2 hours long and it costs 12 quid or whatever, then you can't really be complaining for something that lasts 5 hours and may actually be good, costing you $20. There are some games that I feel that there's a bit of a stigma on indie games and their pricing because they don't have the production values.
Yeah.
And in video games, it's different to obviously everything else because it's so inherently tied to technology. So, but one of the, you know, there've been games, indie games that I really like that sometimes aren't even, I would say, that good. Like Uncanny Valley is one of them, which is really good. Check it out on Steam. I'll say no more. But yeah, I think as well, when you look over the what you pay for a video game, it is all relative to everyone. Video game has got so many sharp Steam summer sales, discounts here, storefronts all over the place. It is difficult as a consumer, I think, to think, okay, so what am I actually getting? Here, at least with film, you know what you're getting. You're sitting down for a couple of hours, 3 at the most probably, and watching something. So I wouldn't say that $20 is too much for 5 hours of something that could turn out to be quite good.
Oh, you know, No Man's Sky is an example. Here's an indie game that's not retailing at 20 quid or whatever. Yeah. The Witness was the same. And didn't Jonathan Blow get, or didn't The Witness get shit because it was daring to be 30 or 40 quid?
Yeah. And again... There's a lot of stuff that's, we're not trying to generalize here, really. But if you think about a lot of video game, people that have time to play a lot of video games and really love video games, I'm not saying they all do, but some of them will, the most vocal ones on message boards and on Twitter will probably be skewing younger. So their time is and money, you know, maybe they don't have a lot of either, really. Mm-hmm. Probably the money thing. So it's just one of those. It's hard to price games. It really is. Everyone's struggling with it. because, you know, $60 sounds a lot,
mm-hmm.
but the value proposition could be much higher than certain other things.
If I'd spent $60 on The Witcher 3, I'd be very happy with that.
Exactly.
If that was all in with the DLC and everything else, bloody hell. I think I mentioned The Witcher 3 on every podcast. I'm not in CD Projekt Red's pocket, I promise. I'll do one more, just because we're both games journalists, allegedly, from someone called Bodacious Chase. If anyone else tweeted in, I had another one here, but there were some other people as well, sorry. And it's about games criticism, so why not? Because Vice Gaming is ramping up, I thought it'd be a good thing to look at. We've got people in America now, woo! So expect some podcasting and stuff from them in the near future. But does our profession, does games criticism, focus too much on the stories and stuff rather than how the games actually play? I immediately thought of Doom with this, because there's no story to Doom whatsoever. Like, all the reviews of that, all the coverage was just like, this plays amazingly well. Mm. I thought it played amazingly well. Like, the way it, in fact, Mark Brown, who does Games Makers Toolkit, I think it's called, or he did a great video about how, like, that game flips the way you usually play shooters, where I'm getting hit, I'm going to cover.
Mm.
Where when you're getting hit in Doom, you have to go and kill something to get health back, which I love. It's like, it makes you play super aggressively.
Yeah. I think with game criticism, the game stories on the whole are dreadful. But what's happened, I feel, is that there's been a bit a focus on experiential stuff. So it's less about the actual stories of the game and more about the stories that were told or projected, told to the person or projected by the person. So there's been the rise of the kind of how Game X taught me why, which is fine. Some of those are actually very good indeed. And I think there's one by Gary Dutton that you ran about Street Fighter, and did he do Street Fighter and mental health, I believe, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
So there's been some good stuff in that area, but like any trends, after a while, you're gonna have to
feel like you've seen them.
Yeah, a lot of old games coverage, for example, in like Amiga Power, where it was purely mechanics focused systems. How does it, you know, now games have kind of broadened, so it's not literally just walking left to right, punching men in the face. And so there is a bit more talk about the story or the narrative and how that fits into the general aesthetic of the experience. What I will say is that sometimes there isn't enough focus on how the systems work together, which is why I think stuff like Game Maker's Toolkit appears to be so fresh, because that is just assumed in a lot of reviews that you know how certain things work.
Yeah.
And I think with a lot of critics, they don't ever either A, explain why they like stuff, they just say that they like it because it's you know, it's just superlative here. But they don't, sometimes they don't see themselves how it fits together. And so yeah, those video game development is so crazy difficult, not because I don't think of all the disparate parts and all the fucking maths, but it's the way those systems go together. And if one breaks, then everything breaks down. So I would say I'd like to see a bit more of the kind of game maker's toolkit. But it's tough, like, because who are you reviewing the game to? It used to be in magazines that you knew your audience pretty much. You knew that if they were buying Super Play, you knew what they were after. Mean Machines, Official Saturn Magazine or whatever. So yeah, difficult, but I'd like to see a tiny bit more mechanics talk.
I think you nailed a great point there anyway, for anyone who wants to do any kind of criticism. And I see it a lot, and I'm certainly guilty of it sometimes, is where you'll just be like, this is great, this is great, this is great, this is great, all these things that are great about a particular piece of media or whatever, but you don't necessarily pause to consider why. And you know, I do lecturing and this kind of stuff, and I should check myself more often than I do. And it's weird, I'll tell my students to do just that, but then I won't do it myself sometimes, because you know when deadlines are and when something has to be up, because we're all chasing that magical embargo and we have to be up bang on the bang on that time. Speaking of embargoes, the No Man's Sky embargo lifts at 4 a.m. so I'm going to go now and think about that. I'm going to the pub.
Don't lie. Don't lie.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Joel Golby for dropping in on our football chat and then running away because he didn't want anything to do with No Man's Sky. He's actually very excited about No Man's Sky, I should add. If I get back out and find it, my copy's disappeared from my desk, then I know where it's gone. All right, till next time. Thank you, everyone. Bye. Bye.